Hello again, I'm John Schrader, and this is Watch the Media. In this venture, we regularly talk with people about what they do, how they do it, where, why, etc. This week, a new, fresh, younger look at working in minor league baseball. How you get there, what keeps you going, and why. Nick Batters is the radio voice of the Kansas City AAA team in Omaha, the Storm Chasers. He's also the director of broadcasting and media relations. He announces the games. He writes and puts together the media guides, writes the game notes every day. This is from a guy who has ambitions and talent to be a big league announcer.
The difficult part about it at this stage is that, and I am reminded this by my peers on a basis so frequent that it needs to be telling me something. Making good game notes and making a good media guide isn't going to get me to the big leagues as a broadcaster. But they are aspects of the job that I enjoy.
This is what will get Nick Batters to the big leagues.
2-0 to Hinkler. High in the air, deep to left center field. Meadows races back, on the run, at the wall. Center field for Brewer. Hinkle blows this one open. 9-0 Chasers at the bottom of the eighth.
Nick Batters was not unfamiliar with Omaha. His father is from there, though Nick was raised in the Northern California town of Livermore in the East Bay, not far from the home of the Oakland Athletics.
I think it was Christmas 2005. My parents got me a little transistor radio that I could stick under my pillow at night and fall asleep listening to the A's games. So the 2006 season where the A's won the AL West and made that run to the ALCS where the Tigers obliterated them, I was able to stick that radio under my pillow every night and fall asleep listening to Ken Korak and, I guess, in his first year, maybe second year at the time, Vince Catronio. And I mean, those were the only announcers I knew for the longest time.
Quickly at the belt, and the 0-2 pitch on the way, swung on, hit to deep left in the corner, right down the line, fair or foul, hits the foul pole, home run, and the A's win. Do you believe it? Marcos Scudero with a three-run home run in the bottom of the ninth inning off the foul pole off Mariano Rivera. What a finish.
That is longtime voice of the Oakland A's, Ken Korak. He's been in the big leagues for over three decades. Nick Batters is going into his second season in AAA after 2 years in AA, both of them farm teams for the Kansas City Royals, for which he called a few games in Toronto near the end of the 2023 season.
Infield chains to pull, and the 2-1 pitch. Line to the right, over the leap of the first baseman Guerrero Jr., and down towards the corner. Isbell a turn at first, he's headed for second, as Springer bobbles the ball in the corner. Now Isbell rounds second and headed for third. He dives in head first safely with a triple.
That's the voice of Nick Batters, the voice of the Omaha Storm Chasers. He's with us on this episode of Watch the Media. I'm John Schrader. So, Nick, to start this conversation, let's get a little bit of bio information from you. You are a Northern Californian, a Bay Area native, East Bay native, who ended up in Nebraska as the voice of the Omaha Storm Chasers and the broadcasting and media relations manager for the Omaha Storm Chasers of AAA baseball, the top minor league affiliate of the Kansas City Royals. So how in the world did you get from the East Bay of California out here in such a short time?
I think I ask myself that just about every day. It's been a long and winding road, and being in Omaha is fun for me because my dad's from here. When I was a kid growing up in Livermore, we'd take trips to visit my dad's cousin or We take trips to visit my dad's siblings and his parents in Omaha once a year, maybe once every other year. So I had a little bit of a foundation in Omaha. I still have some aunts and uncles and cousins out here. And with the connections that I had to the area and the Royals, it just made sense when the chance to call games for the Storm Chasers came open. I had to find a way to come out here.
So are you the only batters who got away from Nebraska? You mean you ended up in California, but most of the rest of your dad's family is from here?
Yeah, my dad and my mom met at college at Rice University in Houston. I have a couple of his siblings out here. His oldest brother is in Manhattan, Kansas. My dad was technically born in Kansas City, grew up a couple of years in Manhattan before the family moved to Omaha. So his eldest brother stayed out in Manhattan. I'll be going to their house for Thanksgiving, actually. But my dad went to Texas and then eventually moved out west to California. But the rest of the batter's family is still here.
So is there some Kansas City Royals history in this family then? And they were founded in 1969. So I'm guessing your parents were pretty young when they were founded. And so is there something there?
Yeah. So I mentioned my dad's eldest brother, Jim, actually grew up a Kansas City Athletics fan. And he was crushed when they moved to Oakland. But he was obviously excited to have the Royals in town once they came to the area, even though he was living in Kansas. Obviously, Manhattan's what, a 2-hour drive from Kansas City. My dad's entire side of the family, they're Royals fans. And my grandpa would take his kids, my dad and his siblings, whether it's to the College World Series or just to Rosenblatt for Omaha Royals games. That love for the Royals is passed down for the other siblings to their kids. I actually have a couple of cousins that live in Kansas City. They're on the Kansas side of the border. They're huge Royals fans. Their kids are huge Royals fans. And so they all think it's the coolest thing that I'm here broadcasting Royals AAA baseball. My grandpa passed away in March of 2022, but in 2021, my first year with Northwest Arkansas, he was so proud of the fact that I was broadcasting for a Kansas City Royals affiliate because he loved the Royals. He loved the Omaha Royals and then Omaha Storm Chasers, and he'd go to a few games every year. So he was excited that I was doing baseball for one of the Royals minor league affiliates. And probably once a week during that 2021 season, Northwest Arkansas, I would call him on my drive home from work, and he'd want to know all the Royals top prospects and who was doing well. And there were a couple of times where I'd be texting with Ryan LaFever, the television voice of the Royals, giving him updates on that year. We had Bobby Witt Jr. and MJ Melendez and Nick Prada, some of the Royals top prospects, or even major league rehabbers. We had Adalberto Mondesi for the better part of a couple of weeks. And so I text Ryan updates, and he would give my updates on air, on TV, give me credit. And my grandpa thought it was the coolest thing that I was getting name dropped on the Royals TV broadcasts. So once I had the chance to call some games for the Royals this year, I mean, just everyone was so, so proud and so excited.
You know, you wonder sometimes why things happen in life. You almost maybe wake up one day and say, how in the world is this happening? My family, Royals fans, my grandfather's was a Kansas City Athletics fan. I might be the only person in Livermore, California, who knows about the Kansas City Athletics. I have no other choice because I learned about it in my family. Do you sometimes wake up and say, wait a second, is this really the way this works in life?
It is crazy. It doesn't make sense to me sometimes. My first minor league games were Omaha Royals games at Rosenblatt Stadium. My family would go out to visit grandpa and grandma for Easter, and Easter usually coincided with opening day in the Pacific Coast League. So my grandpa would take us to a game. I mean, there are pictures of me sitting in the multicolored seats at Rosenblatt Stadium. One year he got me a Kansas City Athletics hat for Christmas, and I proudly wore that to the Oakland Coliseum going to A's games. At my desk, I have I think it was 2013, 2014, my grandpa had the chance to throw out a first pitch at Warner Park for an Omaha Storm Chasers game. Right before he passed, he gave me that baseball, and I have a little photo album of the photos from that game up in the radio booth. So it is so special to be at a spot where not only I have ties, but I have family. If I want a home-cooked meal, I can send one text to make one, and it'll happen. So it's really special and not something that I take for granted at all.
So how long have you wanted to be a big league baseball announcer?
Well, there was a long period of time where I wanted to be a big league baseball player, and I got cut basically on the first day of tryouts in high school. But it was not that I got cut necessarily, but more the head coach said, hey, how would you feel about being our scorekeeper? And that was the moment where I realized I probably wasn't going to have a future playing the sport. But I was really fortunate in 2013, the Granada High School baseball team, there was a point where that team was ranked second in the country and the entire starting lineup ended up playing Division I baseball, I believe. It was a remarkable year, so much fun just to be a part of that team. And I did the scorekeeping and scorekeeping turned into, okay, I'm also updating the website and I'm writing articles for the website, game recaps. And then that turned into, oh, I'm also the public address announcer and I'm doing the walk-up music. And so it was 2012, 13, 14, that I kind of started to figure out, okay, I like this whole sports media side of things. And I had the chance to do the studio broadcast program at Granada High School. I mean, absolutely fantastic doing the audio announcements and then the video announcements once a week. I did the sports segment, the Batter Up sports wrap once a week for a couple of years. And I still didn't know what direction I wanted to go in necessarily in the sports media landscape because I enjoyed being on camera. But I wrote a blog through MLB.com. I don't know if they still have it, but in the mid-2010s and even in the early 2000s, there was an MLB blogs program where you could write a blog about baseball. You could have the branding of the team on your – choose a team and have their branding on your site, and it'd be whatever .mlblogs.com. And I did that for a few years, writing about my experiences going to A's games, other minor league games, major league games. And so I knew I liked writing. I liked – talking about sports. And for that reason, I chose to go to Arizona State because I knew they had a sports journalism degree, which not a lot of schools have, and just a good journalism program at the Cronkite School. And it was over that first year, my freshman year between 2016 and 2017, that I kind of dabbled in just every realm of sports media. I mean, I wrote articles, I did photography, videography, directing, producing, technical directing, camera operator. I mean, I did everything under the sun, anchoring, analysis, studio hosting, interviewing, reporting. I dipped my toes in everything. And I found pretty quickly that my heart kept going back to play-by-play. That was what I enjoyed the most. I knew I wanted to be around sports media, but I didn't know what that was. And I was really fortunate at Arizona State. When I was a freshman, one of the seniors was a young man named Dominic Catronio. His dad, Vince, is one of the radio announcers for the A's. And Dom was incredible. I mean, he really, really mentored me in ways that I don't know if I've been able to properly thank him for. But just having that person to look up to and say, man, he's doing what I want to do. Because when I came in, he had already finished his first year in minor league baseball. And I got the chance, the last broadcast he did at Arizona State, I was his broadcast partner, which was really special. To make a long story short, the summer of 2018, I went out to Sonoma, California to serve as the voice of the Sonoma Stompers independent league team. That was my first year in professional baseball. And about halfway through that season, I realized, man, this is fun. Like I knew early on that it was fun, but it was during that season that solidified, this is what I want to do. I don't care that I have one day off a week. This is a blast. And this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. So it was probably that summer of 2018 that I realized, this is where I want to be.
So you probably realized then too that what anybody who's worked in baseball knows, that it's not just a job, it's a lifestyle. Baseball is what you live from February till you hope the end of October, if you're lucky enough to play that long. So it is a lifestyle, isn't it? And you learned that early.
It really is, yeah. And those first few years that I spent in professional baseball, whether it was in Sonoma, after that, I worked in the Appalachian League in Elizabethton, Tennessee. I worked a couple of years in the Australian Baseball League. And those first three seasons that I worked in pro baseball, I was still a student. I didn't graduate college until May of 2020. And so I was balancing working in professional baseball with taking classes. I was doing all these classes online during the summer to try and get ahead. And then I was taking classes online through Arizona State while I was in Australia. And the first season that I worked in baseball after I had graduated, so this is November of 2020 into February of 2021, that was the first chance I'd had to broadcast games without having that weight hanging on my shoulders of, oh, you have a homework assignment to go do after this. And that was really cool. That was, again, that was another kind of checkpoint that solidified, okay, I have the shoulder weights off. This is I'm having a blast just broadcasting games. That was a really cool moment.
So I'm going to save this for my students. And I think there's two lessons in there for us, Nick. One is, if you want to do it, go do it. And don't say no. And if that means Sonoma, which is not far from your hometown, but the Appalachian League is far from you, where you're from. Australia is even farther from where you're from. And the other is, you can balance this. You can finish college. You can do this. You can get that education and still be what you want to be. So that, I think, I'm not sure I'm asking for an answer, but I think that's the lesson there. Is that how you feel about it?
Oh, absolutely. It was really important for me to graduate with a degree and still, I guess, get that experience at the same time. And it was tough because the summer of 2018 in Sonoma, 2019 in Elizabethton, that was the summer in between a semester, the summer after my sophomore year and then after my junior year. Australia was a little different, though, because I was going into my senior year. And at the time I was majoring in sports journalism, there were in-person classes that I had to take for that degree that they would not let me do online. And I took a little bit of a risk right before my senior year. I mean, I had basically taken all of the sports journalism pathway classes. There was one in-person session that I had to do, but I couldn't do it online. And I had the offer to go out to Australia. So I kind of took a leap of faith. I changed what my degree was right before my senior year from sports journalism to mass communication and media studies. So it was still a degree through the Cronkite School at Arizona State, but it was a degree that I could complete all online. And the credits transferred over from what I've been doing in sports journalism. So I got the vast majority of that sports journalism degree experience, but I was able to take some generic communications classes to finish it up and get that degree. Had that option not been available to me, truthfully, I'm not sure I would have gone to Australia. There were some other directions I was looking at about getting just a general communication degree outside of the journalism school, but it was important to me to both have a degree but also have a degree from the Cronkite School. And it was tough. I mean, the deadlines with the time changes weren't easy, but I made it work. I mean, I think I had all A's both semesters that I did online. And it was tough, but absolutely worthwhile.
So what did you learn about being a broadcaster and learn about yourself spending that time in Australia?
It was interesting because baseball in Australia isn't viewed the same. On the surface, it's one of the top three sports in the United States. I mean, it's like an eighth or ninth tier sport in Australia. So there's, first off, a completely different audience. Everyone that is watching baseball basically is a diehard. They're all very invested. There aren't many casual baseball fans in Australia. But my first year, I did baseball on the radio. And a great broadcast partner, a guy named Ed Wyatt, who an expat, Stanford grad from the Pacific Northwest, met an Australian woman, married her and moved to Australia. Big baseball fan. And he reminded me that sports on the radio in Australia don't have the same, romantic nature that they do in the United States, right? There's a romance to turning on a baseball game on the radio and hearing the storytelling aspect to the way that the game is presented. That does not exist in Australia, not just for baseball, but sports on radio isn't super popular, if that makes any sense. There are radio broadcasts of sports, but they're not as endearing as they are to sports fans in the United States. So it was an interesting challenge to blend my passion for baseball and my passion for baseball and radio and present that to an audience who doesn't have the same passion for baseball or the same passion for listening to sports on radio. We were on the largest sports radio station in Melbourne. I don't know if it was the largest in Australia, but it was one of the largest. So there was a big reach, a big audience that we were introducing to baseball. And I loved that opportunity to kind of, for lack of better phrasing, dumb the game down, go back to the basics. And it was really cool to go back to the basics of baseball, why I love this and why I love doing what I'm doing. So that was a unique challenge, but one that I'm really, really grateful for.
And then personally, you know, what is it like being that far away from home, and what do you learn about who you are and the core of who you are.
That was tough. I mean, I had Sonoma was all right because it was a couple hour drive from Livermore. Elizabethton, Tennessee, it was tough. I mean, it's a town of 10,000 people. I had to take a 45-minute Uber from the airport to live in a motel and then bike 3 miles to the ballpark, but it's the United States. There are those, like, I could go to Walmart, buy a bike. I could go to McDonald's and get some chicken nuggets or whatever. I had those places that I could go to. But Australia was tough because for my first time, I land, all of a sudden my phone doesn't work because I don't have cell service. Okay, so now I have to figure out how do I get an Uber or how do I get a taxi and then go, again, it's about a 35-minute Uber ride to get to where I was staying. And okay, this woman that I'm living with really doesn't speak any English. I mean, I was just renting a room in someone's house. She doesn't really speak English. Okay, where's the grocery store? Oh, I don't have internet yet. I have to go get a phone. How do I do that? I mean, there were just a lot of little challenges about, I mean, this is really the first time, as silly as it sounds, this is the first time that I was like really put in an adult situation because college is only so much, like you're still kind of a kid in college. And even the summers before that in Elizabethton, I mean, I'm the same age as all these college age guys. And in Sonoma, I mean, it's an internship, but in Australia, it felt like a job and it felt like an adult job. So there were just inherent challenges of being an adult, going to set up a bank account on my own for the first time. Again, being responsible for groceries and laundry, just in a way that I wasn't used to in college. I mean, it's sharing the kitchen with someone and sharing the washing machine. And, oh, they don't have a dryer here. I have to go hang dry my clothes. There were just so many little challenges like that here or there. But again, I think they all helped me grow really professionally and personally more than anything.
Here's the 1-2. Mervis hits that high in the air and deep to right center field. Rave races back onto the warning track. At the wall, he leaps, crashes into the wall, and he held onto it! You have got to be kidding me, John Rave! Holy cow! He bobbled it and maintained control for the out! One of the best catches you'll ever see!
Nick Batters is the voice of the Omaha Storm Chasers, the AAA baseball team in Omaha and the top affiliate of the Kansas City Royals. I'm John Schrader. As you know, Nick, I spent a lot of my adult life in the Bay Area. I'm a Nebraska native, but I worked in the Bay Area for a long time. And some of my favorite people in all the world and in the broadcasting world, to be sure, are Bay Area broadcasters. Who did you admire and who did you look after and who do you think helped sort of form your... if style may not be the right word, but help form you as a broadcaster?
Well, my first introduction to baseball, truly, like my kindergarten teacher was an A's fan and I liked her. I wanted to be like her. So I liked the A's too. I have a memory of my mom is from Massachusetts and we went back east to visit her parents and her dad was watching the Boston Red Sox game on TV. And wow, the team, the Red Sox are playing his green jerseys. My favorite color is green. And then you learn, oh, wow, that's our local team. And so I wanted to get into baseball. And I think it was Christmas 2005. My parents got me a little transistor radio that I could stick under my pillow at night and fall asleep listening to the A's games. So the 2006 season where the A's won the AL West and made that run to the ALCS where the Tigers obliterated them, I was able to stick that radio under my pillow every night and fall asleep listening to Ken Korak and I guess in his first year, maybe second year at the time, Vince Catronio. And I mean, those were the only announcers I knew for the longest time. I mean, I would go turn on the TV, listen to Glenn Kuyper and Ray Fosse for the first half of the game. And then, oh, it's bedtime. I'm going to go listen to Vince and Ken. That was really, really special. The chance to, I mean, it was Ken Korak and Vince Catronio that introduced me to the A's, helped me fall in love with the game of baseball. It was Daniel Brown did an article in The Athletic during the 2020 summer interviewing broadcasters from the Bay Area. that had been influenced by other broadcasters. So he talked with myself. Josh Sushan is from Pleasanton. Now he's with the Albuquerque Isotopes. And it was really cool to see how many people in the Bay Area had been influenced, whether it's Ken Korak or obviously Bill King's a big one in the Bay Area. John Miller recently. I could go on and on. Hank Greenwald, and there are so many. But I mean, Ken Korak's the big one for me. And there were even times it was that article where I realized how many Ken Korakisms I had, whether it's talking about how the lights have taken full effect or I mean, I think my first home run call in Double A, I ripped off straight from Ken Korak. I think I said the right fielder will watch it fly. But it just it's really special to think about how much the combination of Ken and Vince has influenced me as a broadcaster.
So does Ken know this? And you've told him this? And what was his reaction? If that's
he's read the article. I'm kicking. I need to shoot him an email. I should have emailed him after that article came out in 2020. But I remember seeing him quote tweet the article on Twitter and just express the gratitude for how many broadcasters had been influenced by the work he has done.
Yeah, he would probably say that when he was your age and young, it was Vin Scully who helped form him. It's sort of a long line of people that you get from, you know, one place to the next. But and there's nothing wrong at all. And I don't want anybody to misunderstand this. You said there's a lot of Ken Korakisms in what I did when I was a broadcaster. And these are not copyrightable, right? These are things. And you end up having your own. You end up having your own style, your own isms, and your own way of calling games. But you have to start somewhere. And being in a big metropolitan area where the broadcasters are very professional and very experienced is an advantage you have. Let's be honest. It's an advantage you have and had. Now, you can hear broadcasters from all over the country now if you have Sirius and you have other ways to get it. But in 2005, that was the way. You were formed by really highly quality professional people. And that's kind of a nice break for you, isn't it?
It's really, really special. I even think how many games I watched on TV and again, listened to Glenn Kuyper and Ray Fosse. And I unintentionally kind of turned that baby is gone into my own because I had heard that baby is gone from Glenn Kuyper so many times. In Australia, it was brought to my attention that I had a home run call of, and that ball is gone. I just switched out baby for ball to kind of make it my own. And I didn't want to fall down a rabbit hole of having a signature home run call. So I still default to that more than anything of, and that ball is gone, kind of in the same intonation. But even now being in the Royal system, the chance that I have to listen to Denny Matthews, a Hall of Famer already for so long, Ryan Lefevre has been at it for the entirety of the 21st century in the Royals booth. And now Jake Eisenberg has joined them as well. Steve Stewart's fantastic. Another area where there are so many talented broadcasters. I just, again, feel so fortunate that I'm able to learn from them and just take things in by listening to and watching their broadcasts.
One last question about Ken Korak, okay?
Sure.
He is a good friend of mine. And if he was in the room right now sitting with you, what would you say to him? I might share this with him.
Oh boy. a good question. I'm grateful for the fact that Ken provided such a good broadcast that helped me fall in love with baseball. I think if the broadcast, I mean, I as weird as it sounds, you might agree with this. One of the best compliments that you can give a broadcaster is that you can fall asleep listening to them because they're so easy on your ears. And that's how he and Vince were for me. It was just such an easy way to fall asleep. And I'm grateful for that because if it had been a tough lesson and I can't fall asleep, well, I don't know if I'd have the same connection to the game of baseball and the Oakland Athletics that I do.
Yeah, I think that's a compliment that he would take, and I think any broadcaster would take that. You're comfortable. You're with me the whole time. You're that comfortable. And baseball is a sport that demands that comfortability. It demands that voice that you can listen to for hour after hour after hour.
One reaches out for second, driven to left center field, on a line, will drop it, tie this game. Hinkley trots home from third and rates around from first. He scores dead enough to give the Chasers a lead.
What is your offseason like? Because as we've already mentioned, baseball is a lifestyle, and so you have to be on top of it every day, even in the offseason, maybe even especially in the offseason, because you don't have yesterday's game to talk about. You still have to do some things. So what do you do this time of year as a baseball announcer?
This time of year is pretty relaxing for the most part. I guess I say that with an asterisk. I mean, I'm in the office right now, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., Monday through Friday. That'll go to 5 p.m. come February or whenever for the last couple of months of the offseason. But right now, it's a combination of a few things for me. I wear so many different hats in the Storm Chasers front office. Right now, I'm booking the team's travel for next year, the flights and the buses and the hotels. But I'm also, there's a big research component to my job. Each offseason, I think the biggest job that I have is making the team's media guide for the next year. You mentioned I'm the broadcast and media relations manager. Last year, the Storm Chasers media guide came out to 175 pages. And a lot of that, over 60 pages of that, is player bios. So once the Rule 5 draft happens here, I think it's in about a week now, I'll start to really look at, okay, who are the guys that I think we're going to see in Omaha next year? Because it's really just throwing darts at a dartboard of guessing, okay, I think this guy's coming up from Double A, or this guy might be back with us. This guy might be sent down at some point if he's struggling from Kansas City. Usually my hit rate's pretty good. I think the last couple of years that I've made a media guide, about 80% of the players that I've included have spent some time with that team. And then there's also a research aspect of, right now, I'm building a page for the Storm Chasers website of every big leaguer who has played in Omaha. And when I say big leaguer, I guess this page is MLB alumni. So it's 331 players that played AAA baseball in Omaha before they made their major league debut. So I'm doing research on how they did in Omaha, the big leagues, their debut. I'm looking for photos of them. I have an all-time roster that I'm putting together for the Storm Chasers website. And there are some other random historical things that I'm thinking of, like what's the most consecutive games that someone's hit a home run, last time certain things happened. We both turned a triple play this year and hit into a triple play this year, which was remarkable. The triple play, a complete side note, the triple play that we turned, I'm still not convinced was actually, it was a ball hit to our shortstop, go to second base to get the out, throw to first, runner safe, throw across the diamond to third, runners tagged out trying to get back to third base. Everyone on the field thought it was the third out of the inning. So they start jogging off the field, and been safe at first. Our third baseman's running by and just kind of tags him for fun, like as a joking thing. And, oh, that's actually the third out of the inning. And that was just a triple play. So I want to do research, is dig through box scores and newspaper clippings to find out, when did things happen? Heard rumors that Deion Sanders hit an inside the park home run at Rosenblatt Stadium. I'd like to confirm that. We'll see. There's always some kind of new project to do some research on.
So how was the Nick batter's call on that triple play?
It was, I did not call it. I was off those games because my sister graduated from the University of Hawaii this past May. So I took a few games off in May to be able to go off to Hawaii and see her. So I had Gary Sharp. I think it was Gary Sharp was filling in for me on the Storm Chasers Baseball Network. So all of a sudden I get a text from our social media manager, Nina. We just turned a triple play ? And so I went back and I watched the video, and I think the official score went back and forth on it a few times. That's not one continuous play. But the triple play that we hit into was a rather deflated one. It was in Gwinnett early July, and I mean, it just absolutely killed the rally in a close game. And then the Gwinnett Stripers went on to just surge ahead in the bottom of the inning.
And how was the Nick batter's call for that one?
Not very good. When you're hitting into the triple play, and it was actually the first triple play that I had broadcasted, which is kind of cool. But it was, I mean, nothing special.
You talked about all the great players in Omaha, right? Now, can you go back to the Cardinals, or is it just the Royals affiliation? There was a guy named Bob Gibson who's from Omaha who pitched for the AAA team in Omaha, but they were the Cardinals then, right?
That's right. Yeah, I'm starting with the way that I'm approaching this is I'm starting in the Storm Chasers. So with the MLB alumni and all the records, I start with the Storm Chasers era, so 2011 to present. Once I have all the information I want on that era, then I'll open it up to 2005 when the MLB stat system was kind of all put under one umbrella. That's when the record keeping in minor league baseball was all put in one place. So any data that I want from 2005 on, I can find really, really easily. One of the things I looked at this year was immaculate innings, four strikeout innings, stuff like that. That's all really easy to find from 2005 on. But anything before then is kind of tough. So I'm going from the Storm Chasers era. Once I have everything there, then I'll look 2005 to present. Then after that, I'll probably go back to 1969. And then once I have all of the information I could ever want from 1969, then maybe I'll go back to the Omaha Cardinals. We'll see what I have time and patience for them.
Nick Batters is the voice of the Omaha Storm Chasers of AAA, affiliate of the Kansas City Royals, also the director of broadcasting and media relations. I believe, did I get that right?
You got it. You're right. Yep.
And so, you know, part of that you mentioned was making the media guide, and you have to prepare notes every day. What preparation did you have for that part of the job, which goes with it? You want to be a big league announcer, but there's other things you have to do to get there.
It's interesting. I've never received any formal training on the media relations aspect of the job. And the difficult part about it at this stage is that, and I am reminded this by my peers on a basis so frequent that it needs to be telling me something. Making good game notes and making a good media guide isn't going to get me to the big leagues as a broadcaster. But they are aspects of the job that I enjoy. When I went to Sonoma in 2018, part of what pushed me in that direction. At the time, I had an offer to go be a public address announcer in the Cape Cod League, which had stemmed from, I had accepted a job in the Alaskan Baseball League, the Alaskan Summer League, to be one of their play-by-play broadcasters. And then I had the chance to go work in the Cape Cod League. And then I had the chance to work in Sonoma. And the difference between Sonoma and I'll use the Cape Cod League as an example. The Cape Cod League has so many interns. Every team has so many interns. So everyone's doing a specialized thing. The broadcasters are broadcast. That's it. And in Sonoma, I was given the opportunity to broadcast the games and write the game recaps and do some social media. The game notes weren't even a part of my job description, but I saw that year I want to be in minor league baseball. And all of these minor league baseball job openings that were posted said that their broadcaster has to be doing the game notes too. Well, I guess I'll figure out how to do that because that's what I need to be able to do to take the next step. And so I did my game notes in Microsoft Word in 2018. And then I discovered this software called InDesign that makes these things much easier. And it looks substantially better. In the off season, my junior year of school, 2018 to 2019, I basically self-taught myself InDesign. It's very similar to Photoshop, and I already had a foundation of Photoshop, but I recreated my game notes from Sonoma in InDesign, and then I was able to use InDesign when I got the job in Elizabethton, and I did my game notes in Elizabethton, and then I went out to Australia, and my boss in Australia, a guy named Josh, who's no longer with the team, he didn't really have a lot for me to do my first month or so there, and so he told me, just do some research. I was like, well, I have this month and a half. I should try and make a media guide because teams have media guides. And I have all these statistical questions that I want to know, and it makes sense to put them all in one place. So I wasn't told to make a media guide, but I went ahead and did. And then that turned into, okay, well, then I have to make a media guide for my next season in Australia. And it's kind of just spiraled from here to a point where making the media guide, doing the game notes, these things are a part of my duties. But again, I was just originally hired to be the broadcaster live tweet, and I've kind of added things on because I've seen the value in doing those things to help move up the ladder, which, I mean, they've certainly helped me get that next job at the next level.
So the top of the ladder is Major League Baseball. Yep. And I'm not a math major. And one of the reasons I went into journalism is because I'm not good at math and science. But I do know that there are 30 teams, which means there's about 100 jobs. And on television, a number of those jobs, if not half of them, go to former players. So let's talk about radio. Maybe there's 100 jobs. So probably less than 200 big league jobs overall. And you know that. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, right? So what keeps you going? What makes you say, I am going to be there. This is where I want to go. This is what I want to do.
There are some days in minor league baseball, probably more than I'd like there to be, that are just brutally tough, where you're pulled in 10 different directions. You're having to put out fires and handle things up until game time. This year at Omaha especially has been fun because with past jobs, I have live tweeted while broadcasting the game. This year in Omaha, I did not do that. And that was part of what drew me here, was that we have a social media manager, Nina. She's fantastic. She handles that. So during the game, I can focus on broadcasting the game. And more often than not, no matter how bad my day has been, no matter how many fires I had to put out, when the clock strikes, whether it's 6:30 during the school year or 7 in the summer, I get to call the game. I'm sitting here with what I think is the best seat in the house. I get to watch baseball, which I've loved basically my entire life. I get to talk about baseball, and I'm getting paid to do it, which is pretty cool. And to see these players that are going to be future major league stars. I mean, I think back to how spoiled I was in 2021 to have Bobby Witt Jr. and MJ Melendez and Nick Prado. And I don't think it really dawned on me until more recently how special that was. I realized it was cool that we had these top prospects. But seeing what, again, a guy like Bobby Witt Jr. has done since he was in Northwest Arkansas is really special. But again, at the end of the day, I'm getting to call baseball and I'm having a blast doing it, keeping score and telling stories and getting the fans just as excited about the game as I am is really cool.
First pitch, swing and a miss for a strike. Crapley's throw to second, tag for a man. He did it again! Tyler Crapley guns down Kanan Smith and Jigba for the second out here in the sixth inning.
You mentioned Ja Sushan, who, because of my Bay Area connections, is a friend of mine as well. And he's been in minor league baseball for a long time, and the chances of him and a whole bunch of other people are that he won't become a big league baseball announcer. I don't mean to say Josh particularly, but there's a lot of people like Josh who've been doing it for a long, long time. You know that, but how does one get from AAA to the big leagues? What do you need to do to be that guy who sort of breaks through?
It's tough. It's really, really tough. I've definitely been pretty darn lucky to this point, I'd have to say. Again, not to pat myself on the back, I recognize I've worked really, really hard. I've done a great job of networking, but there is an element of luck to all of this. And part of that luck is being in an organization like the Kansas City Royals, where I've gotten to know the folks in the front office, whether it's the leadership, like general manager J.J. Piccolo, or the VP of communications, Sam Mellinger, who's fantastic. But I'm forming these relationships and even trying to maintain relationships outside of the Royals organization, people that I've crossed paths with or interviewed with, just trying to maintain professional relationships the entire time. But in that relationship making aspect, part of what I've done, both with the Naturals and then again here into Omaha, just trying to maintain a strong connection with the folks in Kansas City. There aren't many minor league teams that are within a 3-hour drive of their major league affiliate. I do everything I can to take full advantage of that. I've probably been to 2, 3, 4 Royals games each of the last few years, and I've been fortunate that I can send one text. I'll have a press pass waiting for me when I get to the ballpark, and then I can go watch the game from the press box, and I can just waltz into the Bally Sports Kansas City booth, sit sack dab between Ryan LaFever, Rex Udler. They're not going to bat an eye. I can go walk into the radio booth, say hi while they're on air. Like it's a really cool opportunity. But this relationship making aspect, part of that I mentioned Sam Mellinger, trying to be not just friendly with him, but if they need something help them how I can, stay in touch, say hello when I'm in town, and just maintain a professional relationship. Mm-hmm. And so Sam calls me this past August, and it was the first week of August, and he asks, "Hey, do you have a passport?" Yeah, why? Well, it turned out they needed someone to fill in on radio when the Royals were going to Toronto in September. And because of part of the fact, I'm their AAA broadcaster. I've been in the Royals organization for a few years, but also I had built that relationship with Sam over the past couple of years. And when he got the job in Kansas City, I made a point to reach out to him right away, not because I wanted anything out of him, but that's just the right thing to do, to start a relationship with him in that role as soon as he was there. And that led down the road 2 years later to him asking me to fill in on Royals radio. So I had the chance to go to Toronto with Kansas City this past September. And sure, part of that's that I call a good game, and part of that's that I know the players, but again, part of that was the relationship forming aspect to it. And so it's cool to see how those relationships led to getting that opportunity, and to get to the next step, it's maintaining relationships and creating new ones.
Yeah.
I made a point to try and introduce myself to as many people as I could in Toronto. It's networking with as many major league broadcasters and AAA broadcasters, just minor league broadcasters in general. Because even if there's a AA broadcaster who could go to the big leagues if he wanted to, maybe that's not what he wants. Maybe he has a family that can't move, or maybe he's just decided it's past his time. Well, if I have a good relationship with him, maybe he'll recommend me for that job. So this entire industry is just based on relationships.
Yeah. So there isn't anybody in this business who doesn't listen to their own work and who isn't the toughest critic of their own work. What do you need to do to get better to be a big league announcer?
I need to enunciate better. That's the thing that I kick myself for the most to my tapes. There are very nuanced things like saying the score more and pinpointing the ball in baseball. But everything that I've listened to of my own work, I kick myself for the poor enunciation more than anything. And that is emphasizing, not necessarily emphasizing words, but enunciating words in a very pointed way. I found that I'd drag on the last letter of a word. And here's the pitch. And I'm not doing that intentionally. No, it's and here's the pitch. Just end the word. You don't need to drag it on. And so that enunciation aspect, I think, is what I want to work on the most, just that professional delivery. The past couple of years, I've just generally struggled with how to use my voice as a tool. And he jokes about this because he thinks it was a ridiculous thing to say, but late in the 2021 season, I got a text from Jake Eisenberg, who's at the time he was the voice of the Storm Chasers. Now he's in the Royals radio booth. And I'm paraphrasing, but he basically told me that I had a bad home run call, that I just got way too, not excited, but my voice got really high, because that, as humans, that's what we do when our voice gets excited, it gets higher. And so we had a very productive conversation after the game about how when you talk, try like punch out with your voice. Don't punch up, go out. And that's the other thing I'm trying to work on, is having a professional delivery and not letting my voice get too high in those exciting moments.
Base is empty, two outs, and the 2-2 pitch. Hit down the left field line towards the corner. Varsho turns around, and that one's gone. Into the Blue Jays' left field bullpen. Tyrone Blanco, his second home run of the season, and the Royals take a 1-0 lead in the top of the third.
So what would you tell a teenager, maybe a teenage Nick Batters, but what would you tell a teenager or a college student about this journey, and what advice would you give them, and maybe some that you wish you had heard when you were a teenager?
Well, the two pieces of advice that I try and give any student that is trying to get into the sports media landscape, it applies to play-by-play absolutely, but just any general aspect of sports media, it's get as much experience as you can. and be nice to everybody. Now, the experience part, I have not once in a job interview been asked what my GPA was. What these teams care about is the experience that you have. So in college, I was the annoying kid that was signing up for every single broadcast on the student radio station that I could. I didn't get an opportunity to go broadcast ASU men's hockey. So I went and I started a new organization to broadcast the women's hockey games just to give myself that opportunity to get reps. I would have loved to spend the summer of 2018 on Cape Cod where literally every single one of my friends from college was. But no, I went to go get more reps in Sonoma where I didn't know anyone. And so just getting as much experience as possible. I mean, I know so many people that would just go sit in the back of the stands and call a game into their phone. All of our smartphones have voice recorders now. And then you go back and listen to that. And there are people in this industry who have gotten jobs from those tapes. So getting experience any way you can, it doesn't matter the sport. Early on, not saying no, like always say yes. Have you done it? Yes. May not be the truth, but say you've done it and do it. Just get as, I mean, I'm at the point now where I can say no to some stuff. I don't have to accept every broadcast offer that comes my way. But early on, nobody should treat that as the case. Early on, you should always say yes to everything. But the being nice aspect is interesting because when you get to the point of being a big league broadcaster, right? I think anyone that is in double A or above probably is a good enough broadcaster to be calling games in the major leagues. So when it comes time for these major league teams to make their decisions, I mean, they're really splitting hairs with who they want to hire. And one of the things that these teams are going to look at is, okay, who is, yes, we have so many great broadcasters. Who is the best human being in this group that is going to be a good ambassador of our organization? And so I guess the philosophy that I'm trying to take is if I am nice to every single person that I come across, like there's not a chance that I will get to that point where a major league broadcast team is looking at adding me. They're not going to find someone that's going to say a negative thing about me or, oh, he's not a good person or he was rude to me this one time. You never know like where one small interaction can help you down the road. Everyone knows everyone in this industry. Whether it's from a broadcast standpoint, just the sport of baseball. Everyone has these 2 degrees of separation. And if you're nice to everyone, that can only help you.
So at this point, do you still get up every day and say, this is where I belong, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, this is what I want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a point this season where the team was on a 2-week road trip and I was struggling. It was such a grind this year, and there were points where I did not enjoy it. But getting the opportunity to go to Toronto, and again, I'm so very fortunate because there aren't many people my age. I'm 25. There aren't many people my age that have broadcasted Major League Baseball that young. But getting that opportunity, knowing that I had that to look forward to at the end of the season, kind of helped push me down the final stretch. And then after that point, I mean, that was the neatest experience I have had professionally. Because I talked about not live tweeting games. You kind of feel like you have like you're flying. I felt like I was flying freer, right? I could focus during that 3 hours on broadcasting the game. Well, all of a sudden I'm in the big leagues. I don't have to do game notes. I don't have to write a press release or go organize an interview. My entire weekend is focused on the broadcast. Man, this is cool. You have a crowd of 40,000 people at the Rogers Center cheering for the Blue Jays. I mean, George Springer, the second day that the Royals were in Toronto, there's a crowd of 40,000 at the Rogers Center. The roof is open. You can see the CN Tower. George Springer hit 2 home runs. I called the second home run, and that stadium got so unbelievably loud. And it was just so cool to be in that moment and kind of look around. Man.
The 2-2 pitch. Driven high and deep to right center field. Velasquez and Waters converge. Waters turns around, and that one's gone. Into the Royals' right center field bullpen. George Springer has his second homer of the game. And it's 5-1 Blue Jays at the bottom of the seventh.
This is cool. And that reinforced, this is what I want to be doing. And it's definitely pushed me through this offseason to really get better at the broadcasting aspect, to hopefully be able to land a major league job one day.
Well, we hope you do. Congratulations on everything so far in these 25 years. We appreciate your time with us and the advice you've shared with us. And we'll be keeping an eye on you, and we'll certainly keep in touch. Thanks.
John, thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Northern California's native son, Nick Batters. He's the voice of the Omaha Storm Chasers, the director of broadcasting and media relations, and starting his second year in 2024 as the voice of the Storm Chasers. He's been with us on Watch the Media. I'm John Schrader.